forum for Ward 2?
That's it.
Okay. Should I start again? Good evening and welcome to the Ward Councilors Candidates Forum for Ward 2. This event will be recorded. The link for the audio version of this event is posted in the chat. Before we start this meeting, we acknowledge that we're gathered on the ancestral lands of the Attawandaron people and the territory of the Anishinaabeg, Shawnee, Métis, and Mississauga of the Credit. This land where we now live and work was their land for many thousands of years. This land is still home to over 6,500 First Nations, Métis, and Inuit people. While acknowledging territory is important, we also recognize it's a small part of building new relationships with the First Peoples of Canada. Land acknowledgements must take place alongside ongoing work to forge real understanding and respect and challenge the legacy of colonialism. May we all offer our hands in friendship as we work towards a just future. My name is Deb Stanson, and I will be your host and moderator for this evening's event. My co-host, James Gordon, will be ensuring the tech side of our event runs smoothly and will be monitoring the chat room. For assistance, please post any problems in the chat. Mics will remain muted to minimize any background sound. This event is hosted by the Guelph Wellington Coalition for Social Justice, a community-based coalition of individuals and organizations who advocate for equity, inclusivity, and the well-being of our community. Questions for the candidates were formulated by a new community group, Get Involved Guelph. Tonight's agenda consists of introductions and opening remarks, followed by a Q&A session and ending with closing remarks. During opening remarks, each candidate will have 1.5 minutes to introduce themselves, their campaign, and their vision for the city of Guelph. The Q&A begins with 7 questions prepared by Get Involved Guelph. Each candidate will have 1.5 minutes to respond. It is expected that candidates will not name other candidates. If named, that candidate will have an additional minute to respond. We expect a respectful presentation. The moderator, that being me, has discretion to mute any comments or remarks that are deemed disrespectful. After the round of prepared questions, the virtual floor will then be open to questions from the public as time allows. Please post your questions in the chat box. Each candidate will have 1.5 minutes for closing remarks, speaking in reverse order to the opening remarks. We will end at 8:30. Candidates, our timekeeper will notify you when you have 15 seconds to wrap up your response. When time is up, you will be muted.
The real debate.
Yeah. The candidates who have joined us this evening are Morgan Dandy, Carly Klassen, yes, Aaliyah Morrison, and Rodrigo Goler. The order of presentation has been determined by a draw earlier. And we recognize Rodrigo, please, as our first speaker.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. I am one of the current councillors for Ward 2, and I'm running for re-election because I love the city. My first term as a councillor has been both challenging and rewarding, and I would be honored to have another opportunity to represent the residents of Ward 2, in this case, the new Ward 2. Since being elected, my focus has been on listening to my constituents, understanding needs and concerns, and advocating for the issues that I hear are most important to the residents. My background is in community engagement. I did work for the city for 5 years as a community engagement coordinator, and I didn't necessarily like what I was seeing. I thought a lot of the feedback that we collected from the public was not reflected in the conversations at City Council. So that is one of the reasons why I intended to run. I do live in Ward 2. I have a 3.5-year-old toddler, and I want to make sure that we shape Guelph into a city that he's going to enjoy and be happy in. I'm really looking forward to the conversation this evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rodrigo. And our second speaker will be Morgan.
Thank you so very much. I love my chosen city of Guelph. After 5 years researching which parts of the city would work best for my life, I chose Ward 2 in 2014. As a former homeowner and current renter, I believe I have the ability to understand the nuances of issues to address these seemingly different groups and collaborate to create a greater sense of community connection. I've become involved in the community in many aspects, and my experience as an executive member with Guelph Greens allowed me to discover that my heart lies with municipal governance. Having the opportunity to connect and work with Protect Our Moraine Coalition, GDLC, North End Harvest Market, Guelph Black Heritage Society, GNSC, and Hope House, as well as many other amazing groups, put me on a path to join the Breezy Breakfast team as a co-organizer and host. The involvement with Breezy Breakfast community furthered my desire to serve the city of Guelph as counselor for Ward 2 in order to provide service to the greatest number of people at the level of government closest to their daily life. My privilege has provided me the opportunity to amplify the community efforts of local Two-Spirit LGBTQ+, Indigenous, and Black community members and bring true history to the fore. I believe my lived experience will allow me to be a strong voice for groups who have not always felt welcome in the halls of power. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, our third speaker will be Ilya.
Thank you. Thank you to the organizers of this. Thank you, Deb. My name is Ilya Morrison, and I hope that you'll consider me to be your representative in Ward 2. I have lived in Guelph since 2013, and ever since my partner and I moved here, we've just loved it. We've lived in the ward in Ward 2 ever since getting here. I'm lucky enough to live and work in my neighborhood as technical director at Ed Video Media Arts Center, where I'm an educator and arts manager. I've had the privilege of working with some great groups, Black Heritage Society, Local Immigration Partnership, the Guelph Film Festival. And this experience has really led me to believe that my best work is done in collaboration. And that's what I think we can bring all of us can bring to the city of Guelph is a spirit of collaboration to build for a future that is equitable and a Guelph that is an amazing place for everyone who lives here, where everyone can survive and, or not just simply survive, but thrive through their life here. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Our final speaker will be Carly.
Thanks, Deb. And good evening to everybody who's joining us. Thanks for taking the time to be here tonight. My name is Carly Klassen, and I am a small business owner downtown Guelph. I own and operate the Sage Soap Company, along with another small business, which is called Market Market. We organize markets in the community, and we also organize fundraisers. And I run a program called Community Soap, and we raise funds every month for different organizations within the city. I'm running for city council because I see some of the work that I'm already doing as a natural extension of what is happening on council now. I serve on the Chamber of Commerce as a director. I'm also sitting currently on the Downtown Guelph Business Association and recently a subcommittee as well to talk about tourism and what's happening downtown with Rodrigo. And previously I've served on the Guelph Library Board. And post-pandemic, I considered what was happening in our community. There's been a lot of changes and not all the changes I like. And I also saw a lot of plans put on pause. And I'm somebody who likes to get work done. And I'd like to be able to kind of bring some of my skills working through the community to council. And so in that hope, I hope to be able to serve you as Ward 2 City Councilor for the next 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, now we move on to the program addressing questions. Okay, question one, well-being. The vision statement of Guelph's strategic plan is an inclusive, connected, prosperous city where we look after each other and our environment. First objective, inclusive. While most Guelphites value diversity, some citizens still suffer from hate and other forms of abuse, such as racist and anti-2SL, GBTQ, and incidents. question. How will you help Guelph progress towards its inclusivity vision? And our first speaker will be Ilya.
Thank you, Deb. Inclusivity, diversity, equity, these are things that are really close to my heart. I try to champion them in everything that I do. We have such a great diversity of people here in Guelph, and we need to uplift everyone who lives here. I believe that it is my privilege to be able to lend my platform as a person who holds power to people who have been traditionally excluded from these spaces. One of my strongest beliefs is that, you know, I can make space, I can uplift, I refuse to speak over or for, I want to lend my voice and lend my power to traditionally excluded peoples. So in City Hall, you know, there's a lot we can do. We do have some great groups consulting and advocating at our city, but we do need to increase diversity at the City Hall level. I'm seeing I'm running out of time. One of my big important things, I think we need to value the work that is done through consultation. I think we do need to pay people properly for the labor that they do in consulting with City Hall. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ilya, that only mutes me.
Morgan. The question is, how will you help Guelph progress towards its inclusivity vision?
Thank you so much for the question. It is actually something that I have been working on personally for at least the last 30 months. I've been a shadow counselor, essentially. I've been either at home or in chambers watching all of the files. I've spent time downtown. I have become known to individuals that access services. I have been called an ally by people within the Black community, the Indigenous community, and I've got some amazing people from the Two-Spirit LGBTQ plus community working on my campaign with me. The only thing I can say is I will continue to use my privilege to amplify those voices, continue to listen and do the work required. One of the first things as a city councilor that I would really be looking forward to would be the opportunity to share in the blanket experience with my fellow councilors so we can all have a better understanding of the true history and the true pain of the Indigenous on Turtle Island.
Thank you, Morgan. Carly.
Thank you. I think sort of just building on what Morgan was saying, you know, she's somebody in the community who is supporting the groups that are Guelph Black Heritage Society. She is supporting our Indigenous community. As counselors, we need to be asking ourselves, are we doing enough? And are we inviting the people to the table that need to be at the table? Just putting it out there isn't enough. And I've learned that throughout this campaign, that if you want people to show up, you need to ask them. And so what my hopes is as a counselor is to be able to invite people into the conversation. I'm just one voice, but I would represent all voices. Through some of the work that I do with my business and on various boards, we've had to ask these questions, and we also are the ones who need to be doing the work. We need to be educating ourselves, and setting policy is the start, but then also following up to make sure that things are happening and having measurable tools to make sure that, are we hiring enough people of color? When we have committee meetings, are we inviting people to the table who need to be there? And at every juncture, we should be asking ourselves hard questions. And so I think in that light, that's, you know, what I would aim to bring if I get elected.
I like you, Carly.
Thank you, Carly. Our final speaker will be Rodrigo.
Thank you for the question. I think that representation matters, and we need to see the community of Guelph represented both in council chambers at the employee level, the people that work at the City of Guelph, and the advisory committees that provide feedback to staff and to council. In the last term, we started tracking the makeup of those advisory committees, asking people to self-identify whether they're members of different ethnic communities, minority groups, whether they have people that live in with disabilities, so that we can start to track who is participating in those conversations, who's giving feedback to council, and who's present at the table. I think the next step that we need to do is we need to work through the city's communication department that is actually creating a new communication strategy, one city, one voice, shared purpose. And we need to make sure that as the city plans out a new strategy, we don't lean too heavily on purely digital methods that are just by their nature, they're excluding some members of the community that are not necessarily online. They're excluding members of the community that are not following the city on the social media networks. We need to make sure that we have a diverse city hall that represents the community, and we need to do that by removing the barriers. So figure out what is preventing the community of Guelph from being represented and working on those things. Thank you.
Thank you. Our second question, climate change. In December 2021, the city committed to prepare and work towards interim community-wide greenhouse gas emission targets by the end of June 2022. However, only targets for the city corporation itself have been developed, accounting for only 2.2% of the community's total. Question, what would you do to accelerate the implementation of the city's commitment to a comprehensive city community partnership for Guelph to reach net zero by 2050. And our first speaker will be Rodrigo.
Thank you for the question. I think the first thing we need to acknowledge is that the city has not been handling this well. A few years ago, we city council set a target for becoming a carbon neutral city. We set goals for 2050, and then we took the goals for the corporation of the City of Guelph, for the municipality, and there was a dedicated team of employees that has been working on them. And as was presented earlier this year, they are on track to meet those goals. Unfortunately, that only accounts for 2.5% of the total emissions for the City of Guelph. The rest, we handed it over to a group of volunteers that worked very hard. They actually brought forward a PACE program that will be running in the city later this year or early next year. So residents across Guelph can take loans secured through their property taxes to do energy retrofits. Unfortunately, we asked that group to also self-fund themselves and create a low carbon pathway for the City of Guelph without any additional supports. I think that was a mistake. I think the city needs to take ownership, and we need to become leaders and actually support financially the process for the rest of the city to take that low carbon pathway. I think it's not something that we can expect the community to do by itself. I think it needs a leadership and participation and from the corporation of the City of Guelph. Thank you.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Carly.
Yes, thanks for the question. And thanks, Rodrigo, for the explanation. I mean, I think that's a really critical part of the answer here. From my perspective, climate change is here, and I think that pushing out the timeline sort of takes away from the actual issues that are really happening. We need to, and something that we talked about yesterday, actually, we had a forum at 10C, and one of the things that was brought up there that I really liked was the idea of having interim goals. So each council would have 4-year goals that would be put into place, because these are things that need to be measured short term and not as long term as 2050. Somebody last night said, I'm going to be dead by the time we get to that point. And that's not something that, you know, we're trying to build a future for our children and people's grandchildren. And so these are things that we need to address in short term as well as in long term goals. So I think that what I would bring is trying to bring the idea of, and it wasn't my idea, so I can't take credit for it, but bringing that forward and making sure that we're creating measurable goals and hitting them, not just in 2050.
Thank you, Carly. Ilya, what would you do to accelerate the implementation of the city's commitment to a comprehensive city community partnership for Guelph to reach net zero by 2050?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I have to say I agree. Both Rodrigo and Carly have been hitting the nail on the head. Finding support and funding for the groups that the city has created in essence to do the work that is so essential for them to be doing. To be setting those interim targets so that we know where we're coming from, where we need to be getting to. And I think, as this is addressing the whole community at large, we need to be ensuring that people are enabled to make the greener choices that they need to make so that we're able to reach these targets. Net zero by 2050, it's a great target, and hopefully we can be reaching net zero as a community sooner. And to do that, we do need to be building our city, growing our city, designing our city so that folks are able to make greener choices, such as taking transit, riding the bike, walking. As they get around the city, as they live and work in the city, it needs to be possible and easy, and the first choice, the easy choice, for people to do things that only benefit the environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next final speaker will be Morgan.
Thank you so very much for this question. It is a really important piece of making sure that we hold things as close to 1.5 across the world as possible. I'm kind of feeling like I'm at a session with Haley Kellett. We're all yes anding. So yes, and we need to hold developers to a Guelph standard of building materials and practices, not only for all the new builds, but also for the retrofits that are required to get us to these goals. I'm not sure how to do that, and I want to investigate how Guelph can create the standard that's required for this city to be able to meet the goals that we actually have. I think one of the things that we need to do is improve the coverage and timing of our transit while we switch over to the EVs. I'm really looking forward to the transit review, getting the routes in line, as well as encouraging people to look at the car share. Maybe we don't all need 2 cars. And I absolutely agree with Carly on the interim targets. Maybe we need to do them yearly and not just every 4 years.
Great, thank you, Morgan. Our third question, housing. There is a growing demand for more housing in Guelph, including affordable, social, and supportive housing. The province has targeted for substantial growth, which challenges our sustainability. Question part one, how would you accelerate the rate of infill, intensification, and mixed-use development in Guelph? Question part two, would you welcome social housing construction in your ward, along with increased annual funding for the affordable housing reserve? And our first speaker will be Morgan.
Thank you so very much. When I saw the second part of this question, I was internally doing a whoop whoop because I absolutely want more social housing, not only in my ward, but everywhere in the city. I went through and did a count of the actual units around the city. Ward 2 actually has the second most at this current time when you include Grace Gardens and the number of beds that are going to be coming in at Delhi. Ward 3 is the greatest at over 1,000. Ward 2 has right around the 700 mark. When it comes to accelerating the rate of infill and intensification, mixed use development, we need to look at commercial spaces. We need to look at reducing the fact that we have minimum parking standards. We need to get more creative with parking and getting rid of all of the houses that are sitting there vacant, bringing in a vacancy tax. I really feel that that is something that we can do. And we saw what happened in Vancouver. Within a year, 20,000 condos were available for people to live in with only a 5% vacancy tax.
Great, thank you, Morgan. Our next speaker will be Ilya.
Thank you. I'm going to echo Morgan's yes anding. And I'll answer the easy part of the question first. Question part two. I absolutely would welcome more social and supportive housing within the ward. We need definitely to increase funding for the affordable housing reserve. We need to be building affordable housing. We need to have been building it yesterday. We're behind on that entirely. In terms of infill, intensification, mixed use, these are all things that we need to be doing, exploring, doing smartly, designing the city well to include various types of housing, whether that's duplexes, triplexes, sixplexes, getting some high rises. I would look at the project that is coming at, I think it's Willow and Silver Creek, the parking lot building, looking at converting spaces that have been traditionally, used for storing cars to build up and build smartly so that we can get more housing in for the people who really need it. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And our final speaker will be Carly.
Thank you. Just looking, I really appreciate the written questions because I process through reading. So thank you for that. Just to acknowledge the first part there, the province has mandated substantial growth. I think that, first of all, we need to question, we've mandated substantial growth, yes, but we have a housing crisis and an affordability crisis. So I think, first of all, we need to be pushing against this notion that we need to develop in all sorts of ways. I think we do primarily need to address the social housing, supportive housing, and we need to ask, how do we build this quickly? Because people need homes. And so I think that that's the, kind of a side note there. Something that I've been talking to about people who are builders and who are building apartments, accessory units, who have mixed use development spaces in the city, is the enormous amount of red tape that they have to go through when dealing with the building department at the city. So I think that, I know that there's a lot of things that need to be done to address this, but it's really hard for people to build mixed use developments. It's really complex and it's very frustrating and expensive. So I think that, some hard questions need to be asked there, because there's will, but it needs to be easier for people. And finally, yes, I would welcome more housing in my neighborhood. But with this note, that we need to engage the community when we are building things and make sure that people are being heard, because I'm hearing lots of different frustrations of people who aren't invited to the table. Thank you.
And our final speaker, Rodrigo.
Thank you for the question. So for part one, I think the easiest way to accelerate infill is to change our zoning bylaw. As the other candidates mentioned, there are lots of barriers for people to build extra apartments in homes that could certainly accommodate them. We need to get rid of that, what is essentially outdated red tape that we need to cut through. The city does not allow triplex, fourplex, fiveplex units. We have some in the city, and if people want to renovate them, then they lose that status. So we need to bring that back. We need to get rid of that exclusionary zoning that really favors single family housing, so, and revisit those older ideas of multifamily housing allowed in the city. That is how I would address with accelerated infill. For the question two, in terms of welcoming social housing, I think War II and the new and the old War II has certainly been welcoming of social housing, permanent supportive housing, and we actually need to distribute that around the city. We need to make sure that there's an equitable distribution. As another candidate mentioned, War III has the most amount of affordable social housing. War II is second on that list. We need to look at wards 1, 4, 5, and 6 and have an equal distribution around the city so that we have mixed neighborhoods. That is in an official plan. That is what we are all striving to do. And I want to make sure that we don't create pockets of ghettoized situations where there is areas of the city that have services, other areas that do not have it. So that is something that we need to have a conversation as a community. Thank you.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Our next question, the library. As an anchor component of the Baker District development, the new main branch library will bring significant social, economic, and tourism benefits to Guelph. The project is well underway. Breaking contracts would cost taxpayers millions, and we'd lose the housing units that are attached to the project. Question, please speak to your views on this topic. And our first speaker will be Ilya.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot, as all of us have been, about the library throughout this election season. And the more I think of just how essential the library is for so many reasons. We all know that, as the question states, if we break the contracts, we're losing out on millions of dollars. We can't go back. And we know that all the delays that have taken so long have driven up the price. But we also need to recognize the value that the library brings. You can think of the library as this incredible space for people to congregate, people to gather and, share ideas, share experiences. And it's important that we have this space in our downtown core that allows people to come together, focused entirely on sharing ideas, sharing knowledge, being together without any sort of financial outlay. The library is such a special thing, and it means so much to so many people, provides so many services. We just have to do it. We have to do it. We have to do it now, and we can't look backwards. We can only move forward on this.
Thank you. And our next speaker will be Morgan.
Thank you so very, very much. I love libraries. The first thing I do when I move to a new city is I get a library card. It is one of the things that's always on my to-do list. As a child, libraries were my greatest joy. Going to the Terry Berry Library in Hamilton or having the bookmobile come to my neighborhood, absolutely loved it. When my mom invited me to Calgary to spend a bit of time before Christmas in 2019 with her, she asked me, what would I like to do? I said, the only thing I want to do is go and see the new library. I want to go see the new library. I was so excited. And it was the most incredible experience. When I left, because when the library question came up, I went to grab some of the information that I got from the public library, the new central library in Calgary in 2019. It was the most incredible experience I have had. I want to bring that kind of experience to the people of Guelph. The Central Library is essential. It is the head office for our library system. Without a new Central Library, we cannot grow our system throughout the city. And it just boggles my mind that a city that is as progressive as I've seen Guelph to be from the outside has been fighting against a new library for so long. You're muted, Deb.
I am not now. Thank you. All right, our third speaker will be Carly.
Well, I've been chomping at the bit at this question. I was very excited when I saw it because probably all of you know that I am a huge champion for the Guelph Public Library. I sat on the board for 2 years and I've spent the last 8 years championing this project, and it is absolutely essential that we build this library. I'm probably preaching to the choir in this room when I express my frustrations with the last 8 years. And for other people, I said this evening, I think I've inherited this fight because this is not new. We've been working towards this for 20 plus years. We've lost out on opportunities to invest in real estate because it was too expensive. And so we lost the opportunity to buy the post office. And develop that area. And as a result, we also ended up knocking down a business, Raise, which was the family thrift store, to make way for this progress that never happened. And now it's a parking lot. And so I have been very frustrated by this. I've been spending a lot of my campaign actually mostly educating people about what can a municipality do versus what can a province do. Municipalities can build libraries. This is something that we can do. Provinces can build hospitals. We can support the build of a hospital, and we can do both, and we should. But you know, to kind of wrap it up, I could speak probably for hours about the library, and I'm sorry. I wish I had more time. But if elected, I will just be spending like the first few years just making sure it gets built.
Thank you, Carly. Our final speaker will be Rodrigo.
Thank you, Deb. The reason I supported the library as part of the Baker Street project is because the downtown needs it. From an economic perspective, Upper Wyndham is in bad shape. Businesses are closing. Not many people are venturing that way anymore. And one of the things that I heard speaking to many of the business owners that are on Wyndham Street and other parts of downtown is that they need the influx of people. The current main branch has about 1,500 transactions per day. That's per day. So that's anywhere between 500 to 800 people going in, doing one or two things each. Those people would be coming in through the downtown to access the library. It would be a boon to the heart of downtown. And when the city follows through in the commitment to build the underground parking that is sorely needed and the library, Windmill, the private development partner, they will build underground parking that is needed, first level commercial and two residential towers. There will be a few extra thousand people living, working, playing in the downtown. And that will be what we need to bring downtown Guelph back to life. So when I think about the chance of postponing the library, reducing costs, it just feels like putting a death wish on downtown. So if we stop that project, we're seriously going to harm not only the project itself, but the rest of the downtown core. So for the benefit of Guelph, we need to follow through the commitment and make sure that the library gets built.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Next question, public transit. It is generally understood that public transit use in cities must double by 2030 to meet climate goals and emission targets. Question, what would you do to help us meet this target? And our first speaker will be Rodrigo.
Thank you. I have been disappointed with the progress that Guelph has been making with public transit. Even the goals that have been approved are very, very mild. We need to revisit and listen to our community. We have community groups that are telling us that the best way to improve transit is to switch immediately to a grid model. Currently, everything has to go through the hub and spoke, going to either the downtown central bus station or Stone Road or the Walmart or the university. And that means that if you're going to go from one end to the city of the other, sometimes it takes you upwards of 1.5 hours, 2 hours. And that means that sometimes your bus transfer is expiring while you're in transit, and you end up having to pay for the fare more than once. So we have a system that is not working for most people. And until it is close inconvenience to take public transit as it is to drive a car from one end of the city to the other, we're not going to see that modal shift. So first, give direction for the change to happen as soon as possible, to go to a grid system with buses going up and down all the main avenues. And second, work with the community to see what we can do to provide free transit to as many people as possible. I think that's something that will save us a lot of money on the long run.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Our next speaker will be Ilya.
Sorry, I lost my mute button. Thank you. So you may not know this about me, but I'm a non-driver. I get around on foot, by bike, and by transit. And so I know just how bad it is to be a transit user in Guelph. It's awful. It doesn't take you where you need to go. It doesn't get you there on time. And as mentioned, you always have to go downtown or to another hub to get anywhere to make a transfer. We need to be switching to the grid system as soon as we possibly can. Transit needs to be fast, frequent, and reliable. Those are the three things that people expect transit to be, and Guelph Transit is none of those things. As we switch to a grid model for our transit, we should explore bus priority lanes on some of the major thoroughfares to ensure that you're seeing the bus getting past traffic, getting through traffic faster. We need to work towards making transit the easy choice, the first choice for people who want to get around the city, because a great city is a city where everyone takes transit, and not just, as I saw in the chat, students and the poor. That's not what it should be. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Morgan.
Thank you so much. Glad to hear there's another candidate that is a regular transit user. I gave up my car in early 2020. Joined the car share, decided that I'm gonna see what it's like in Guelph trying to survive on transit. I didn't get my driver's license until I was 19 years old because I lived in Burlington and it had a great transit system that was on a grid pattern that got me where I needed to be when I needed to be there. I've missed appointments recently or had to call somebody and come and pick me up working on this campaign because I'm trying to do it on Guelph Transit. There's areas in Ward 2 I'm gonna have to get driven to because I can't get there on transit, even with a good walk. Getting people on transit, absolutely we need the dedicated lanes. When people see the buses going faster than the cars can go, that is going to get people on. And when it comes to subsidies, we absolutely need to continue with the pilot projects that have been put in over the last year. I am one of the individuals that is eligible for a $4 a month bus pass. And let me tell you, I use it at every opportunity, sometimes just to go a couple of stops. And that's what it takes to get people on transit.
Thank you. Our final speaker will be Carly on this topic.
Thanks. I've spent the majority of my life taking public transit. It's only since I've moved back to Canada really that I've needed a car. Our city, unfortunately, has been built to be very car friendly. And when I'm talking to people, and, you know, I kind of poke fun at people because I say to them, we're kind of spoiled. Like, you know, in Guelph, people are used to being able to go downtown and park. But I think that we need to question that, because not that you can't drive downtown, but we need to get people off of street parking and into garages as well. And we need to make our design, we need to design our city in such a way that it favors public transit. Other cities do this in Canada. And I think that it's something that as we're I want to build on what Rodrigo said about, you know, reevaluating the grid and how we're actually moving people throughout the city. Sometimes I ask myself, you know, did anybody engineer this system? Because it just doesn't make sense. And that's also, I think, why people don't want to take public transit. I don't know if it's as much of a stigma. It's as much as I don't trust this system to get me where I need to go. And so when you lose trust and faith in something, then you start to write it off. And so I think that it's an important question to ask, like, how are we actually building this? And then also bigger, how are we connecting it to other communities? Because people will take transit if they can get to the places that they want to go, such as working in Kitchener or working in Hamilton. And we currently don't have great options for doing either of those things. Thank you.
Thank you, Carly. Our next question, police. There has been considerable community discussion about reallocating some public resources currently assigned to the police to other agencies qualified in harm reduction in crisis context associated with homelessness, mental health, substance abuse, and related matters. Please share your thoughts on this matter. And we will start with Carly.
Sorry, I'm just taking a second to just reread through the question. It was a big one. Yes, I agree with this statement. Police is a complex matter from what I've understood and how the budgeting happens. I'm no expert, but I have a few people have talked to me about this and how we need to work on assigning budget for de-escalation. But I understand that there are challenges right now because the police are provincially legislated and they're municipally funded. So there's some advocating that must be done by council to the province for reform, essentially. And I think, you know, just generally, my perspective is that sending police to situations where people are having mental health crises or they might be overdosing isn't the right position to be taking all the time, because it's an often an aggressive situation when people they could easily speak to somebody who is an expert in, you know, who's a social worker and who isn't necessarily equipped with, you know, things that might risk their lives. So, I mean, again, I think that probably somebody's going to speak to some of the challenges with this from a municipal perspective, and I'm excited to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Rodrigo.
Thank you. So I think there's the underlying question of do I support defunding the police? And that's no, I do not support defunding the police. But I think we can use our resources better. Over the last term of council, we gave two significant budget increases to Guelph Police because Guelph Police was understaffed compared to the rest of the province and the country. So since that time, we were looking at about 10% of Guelph Police officers off on disability. A lot of it caused because of too much work and stress. Because of those budget increases, they now have additional police officers and civilian staff, and they're able to once again do proactive policing. So when someone calls the police, we are not seeing those long wait times that we were seeing a few years ago, where you might have to wait an hour or two to get a response. Having said that, because of that increased budget and those additional bodies in the police service, now there has been a surplus. Last year, Guelph Police had $1.5 million surplus. I would like to see some of those resources go towards things like affordable housing here in the city. I would also like to see more mental health professionals working hand in hand with police. We currently have, I think it's 7 or 9 impact workers through CMHA working at the police station who get called in, but I actually want to see offers riding on patrol with mental health professionals so that when there is a mental health check, a wellness check, or someone needs to respond to whether it's addictions, poverty, there is a mental health responder right away with an officer. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Morgan.
Thank you so much for this question. I actually did advocate for the increase to, I delegated to City Council for the increase in the budget to the police services when that great big jump happened because of the fact that we had so much overtime and so many officers that were on leave due to mental health issues. We needed to get our staffing levels back up. Now that our staffing levels are at an appropriate level, we need to reevaluate line by line what goes into the police budget and what actually does not belong there. We need to put more into mental health workers working hand in hand with the police in order to provide safety to both the individuals that are in distress and the individuals that are providing the services that are needed. As a former worker within the addiction treatment in person, in residence, I know how scary it is when the police have to be involved. And it's not only the people that are dealing with harm reduction when it comes to mental health and addictions. Guelph Black Heritage Society has had a number of incidents where there has been vandalism and they will not call the police because of the historical disproportionate amount of force that is advocated onto Black bodies everywhere on this in this country. It needs to stop. And one of the ways to do that is to reallocate certain parts while we look at things line by line in the police budget.
Thank you. And our final speaker will be Ilya.
Thank you. Things have been said and explained so well already by my colleagues. I was scolded earlier today when I mentioned the term defund the police to a colleague. He said I need to say finding funding efficiencies to channel funds where most needed. I am an idealist. I wish we didn't have to have a police force, but we all know that that isn't the world we will ever live in. We do have provincial minimums that we need to provide funding to the police, and we should have a well-funded police force. We should enable them to do the necessary work that they can do. But we do also need to recognize that their budget, the police budget, is outsized in comparison to social services. And it is understood, I believe, that providing housing, providing mental health supports, providing addiction supports will lead to less of the petty crime, less incidences of crime, and allow the police to focus on bigger issues and more important issues. So we need to ensure that we are providing good, adequate funding to these social services.
Thank you. That's great. Our final question for tonight, democracy. It has been widely stated that the province's ministerial zoning orders, MZOs, and the strong mayor's legislation, Bill 3, are contrary to healthy local democratic process. Question, what are your views on this topic? And our first speaker will be Ilya.
I'm going to also look at this question again in the chat. Just need to look at it and process it for a moment. Thank you. Sorry, my timer is okay. There it is. I think that the province is really trying to meddle in municipal affairs. To put it bluntly, you know, the strong mayor legislation, especially, I think is something that it needs to be outright rejected by every municipality in Ontario. We need to have cities, municipalities able to do the work that is important, and not have, you know, the province taking over the things that we should and need to be able to take care of. Thinking of the Ontario Municipal Board, but how developers can just go to the province and say the city's not playing the way I want them to, and bypass the will of council, and really the will of the people is terrible. In short, I reject it. I need the city. I want the city to be able to advocate for the people and do the work effectively and properly. That's it.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Morgan.
Thank you so very much for this question. MZOs, they've been used way too much by the Ford government. The use of the MZO in order to bring Dolime into the municipality of Guelph was absolutely warranted. And that is the type of thing that MZOs should be used for, not for paving over farmland, destroying wetlands, and all of the other heinous things that the Ford government has been doing with MZOs. The strong mayors, I was so pleased that James's final act was to bring forth that motion. And I did encourage him, as I'm sure many others that he spoke to did encourage him to do that. Get that motion on council. And you know what? If the next council decides they want to overturn that, then at least it's on public record that this council did not support it. We don't know who's going to be in the next iteration of council. So anyone that supports strong mayors, we really need to look at who they are and what it is that they feel that the strong mayors is about. Because even Cam Guthrie was against it.
Thank you, Morgan. Our next speaker, Rodrigo.
Thank you for the question. I think it's scary. It's scary when only 56% of the province sits back and say and they don't vote. So we have a government that was elected at the provincial level with 18% of the popular vote. I think we need to work really hard at the municipal level to make sure that we have a higher turnout for the municipal election, so that we actually have an active democracy with lots of people participating and voting. When that doesn't happen, and then you have 14, 15, 18% of the population selecting who runs the province, this is what we end up seeing. I think that Guelph City Council was right to reject the strong mayor's legislation. When I read it, I became very scared. Municipalities exist because the province allows us to exist. If they change words on a piece of paper, they could eliminate half the councillors, as we saw happen in Toronto. So it also reminds me that we have to play nice. And a lot of times when the province gives us acts like place to grow, we have to plan to grow to 208,000 people, even if we don't like it. We can continue to advocate for a reduction, but if we don't follow what the province tells us that we need to do, then those are some of the repercussions that we could be seeing. So it is something that I don't like, but we have to follow the rules that they set.
Thank you. And Carly.
Yeah, I kind of echo what everybody else is saying here. Like, I'm concerned. I think that it's certainly the Ford government's way of speeding up development timelines and making communities grow faster than they want to and without consultation of stakeholders. And anytime you're doing that, I think that you are going to piss off a lot of people. And I'm scared. Like, I see a lot of concerning, you know, projects coming up, and I don't like it, to be honest. I think it goes against democracy. It, you know, this city elects 12 council. We elect our councillors, and to have all of the discussions, all of the committees, and all of the groups that go into making the decisions and creating influence and building community, it kind of goes against all of that. And I think that we should really be questioning some of these things and pushing back on them. And I was glad to see that city council did, particularly in the strong mayor department. The MZOs, it's the same kind of thing. And I think it creates a lot of fear in the community around, like, oh, if we don't approve this project, then, you know, we're going to get in trouble and then they're going to come after us. And that's a scary position to be in, because it makes you potentially make decisions that you don't want to make. So I think we need to be pushing back and you know, asking the right questions, because, you know, the next 4 years could be kind of scary.
Great. Thank you, Carly. That concludes our questions, other than we do have some in our chat. So I'm going to address a few of those. This is a question from Lauren. Question for candidates. What are the first three steps you think City Council could take in addressing both our mental health and housing crises? And how about if we start with Morgan?
I am a housing first advocate. I experienced a period of homelessness when I was in my 20s. I was lucky enough to have been a couch surfer. I had friends that I was able to be on their couch every night. And still that constant worry of, was I going to be safe that night? It's all consuming, and there's nothing else that you can think of. Getting people housed will help with all of the other issues that we keep talking about. We need to have a closer relationship with the Social Services Committee of Wellington County. Right now, we have finally gotten the mayor position as a voting member on that committee. We need to have the councillors there, at least as people watching and delegating for the people of this city. I have spoken with so many people that access services downtown that don't even recognize that the services that they're receiving are not directly administered by the city of Guelph. The education that is required to understand that difference is more than people have the capacity to be able to even take the time to understand. We need to have a better working relationship closely with the county and get people into housing before anything else can be looked after.
Thank you, Morgan. Rodrigo?
Thank you for the question. So the three things: change the zoning bylaw to make it easier for people to have apartments in the existing houses that we have, and for there to be multifamily units with older homes. We need to invest funds into our affordable housing reserve. That is something that has been sorely lacking here at the city of Guelph. We see Wellington County being a relatively smaller body of government, putting much more funds towards affordable housing because they have a solid plan to end homelessness in 10 years that they started several years ago, and they are on track to end homelessness. And we need to build more social housing. Guelph has not seen any new rent geared to income or affordable housing since 2005. So that's 17 years of growth in the city without a proportional increase in the amount of actually affordable housing. And we lack the tools. Every time a developer comes to city council, the question is asked, will you build affordable housing? And they say, yes, we're going to build some units that are attainable and we're going to do what we can, but there's no commitments because the municipality does not have the teeth to actually compel developers to build housing that is actually affordable. Even the definition the city has, 80% of market rent is considered affordable. That's not realistic these days when market rent, a one-bedroom apartment is $2,000 in Guelph. So if you are having to pay, you know, $1,800 is not affordable. So we need to change that definition so that then we can actually start taking stock of affordability in the city.
Thank you. Carly.
Yes, I mean, Morgan and Rodrigo, I think, said it very well. I mean, investing in affordable and supportive housing is absolutely essential. And like Rodrigo illustrated, like, we just haven't been doing it. So we need to put the money where our mouths are and make sure that housing is getting built for people. And then another thing that I'm going to dance around this one a little bit. I think that especially post-pandemic, it's essential that we spend time advocating for better mental health services for citizens. There is a mental health crisis happening, and it's only got worse. And so there's cracks in the system. And when there's cracks in the system, people fall through. And I know this is a provincial matter, and it's not something that can be voted on at the municipal level, but it is something that we need to be asking important questions of our provincial government. Mental health is at the core of a lot of these issues. And if we're not addressing it head on, then we aren't going to be able to address, you know, housing and other things for the future. If people can't work because their health prevents them from doing so. And unfortunately, the way our system is set up, and I've had to navigate it, it only helps people when you need it. And that isn't when mental health should be practiced. It's something that needs to be being practiced before the crisis happens. So I know that's only two things, but I'm out of time. So I'll stop there.
Thank you, Carly. And Ilya.
Thank you. Yeah, this is such an important topic. And you know, everyone has already been saying amazing things. We do have such a crisis on our hands. You know, it is immediate, it has been ongoing. I'm glad that there is such discussion around this topic. As Morgan said, you know, housing first. We need to get people in housing. We need to get people a safe space to stay. Mental health is really tightly linked with poverty. And when you don't know where you're going to stay at night, when you don't know, you know, if you're going to be safe, it has such an effect on your mental health and just exacerbates the situation. We need immediately, we need to be getting people into housing, you know, whether that's, you know, renting out hotel rooms, whether that is renting apartments for people, we need to be getting them housing. And then, you know, as my colleague said, working towards building that supportive rent geared to incomes, affordable housing, getting that stuff built, advocating to the province for good, fully funded mental health supports, so many things that we can and should be doing and really have been dropping the ball on in the past.
That's great. Thank you so much. Another question directed to you all.
What will you do to work against the prevailing attitude that transit is for the poor and students? How will you encourage and increase ridership? Morgan, we'll start with you.
Oh, wow. Great question. First and foremost, we have to have it properly connected and getting it to the point where we're getting where we need to go in times faster than we can walk there. I use transit regularly. I use the app. I live on the 99 line. And one of the things that we absolutely need to do is have more data. If Guelph Transit doesn't have the data about everything that's wrong with transit right now, they can't go to the city planners and say, hey, look, these are all the complaints that we have about this road or that road or the on-demand service or whatever it is. I went to a youth mental health up at on Woodlawn, and I took the bus because it looked like I could get there. I stepped out onto a gravel space. There was no sidewalk to get me from where I was to where I needed to go. I was in heels. I ended up having to cross four lanes of traffic during the rush hour. We absolutely need to do so much for so many things. And if we don't have the data, the changes can't happen. So please, everyone, when you have a problem with transit, call Guelph Transit, make a complaint so the data is there so we can make the changes.
Thank you, Morgan. Rodrigo.
Thank you for the question. I never thought about it that way. I never saw transit as being for the poor and students. When I lived in Toronto, after I finished at the University of Guelph, it was just what you do. It's just more convenient. And people ride the TTC. And I would often either ride my bike to work or take the bus, depending on the weather, because it was the most convenient way to get to and from places. And it was reliable, and it was timely. And I think that's what we need to do. I think I've spoken to many, many people across this side of the city, across the new and the old ward too. And what I hear is, I would love to take the bus. It's just much more convenient. And not just, it's not that I'm going to get there 15 minutes faster by taking a car. I'm going to shave an hour off my trip by taking a car, an hour and a half. And I think until we can make it comparable so that people can realistically get to work in the morning and get home in the evening in a reasonable time frame, we're not going to see that shift. So I would say that to encourage ridership, we just need to make it go where people are going and change the incremental step-by-step approach that we have currently, where we try to adjust a little bit to a system that is not working.
Thank you. Next speaker, Ilya.
Thank you. Again, so many good points already being made, about collecting data, about, making it work. Our transit does need to work for everyone, no matter where they're going, no matter what they need to do. The system does need to be fully connected around our city. And we've talked a little bit about modifying the system to a grid system, and we need to get on that. It needs to be fast. It needs to be the first choice, or a very easy choice for people to be able to choose instead of taking the car. Earlier in the chat, I was noting that there was a comment, it needs to be comfortable. There need to be proper, stalls at bus stops. Stops need to be where people need them, where people need to go. And you need to be able to get get into that stop, you know, it needs to be an accessible bus stop. I do really think that we should be working towards free transit for everyone in the city of Guelph. You know, if we want people to ride it, what better way than to just make it accessible to everyone? There are so many things, there's so many ways to make our transit better. And I think we've all been touching on a lot of those things.
Okay, thank you. And our final speaker on this question, Carly.
Mm-hmm. I think, politicians like to talk, right? But I think maybe I can keep this one short because I actually agree with what everyone's saying. It has to work. I think that's what it is. One comment I'll make is that I also lived in Ottawa for some time and everybody took the bus. It's a government town and everyone takes it because it's really expensive to park downtown. So it actually is financially an incentive to take the bus. So if you could get a parking pass downtown and spend, I don't know, $200 or $250, or you can get a bus pass, which is like $90 or $100. Now, if the math makes sense, then people will do the math and then they'll make the decision about that. It has to make sense in a couple of ways. And I think we can, and I'm going back to something I've already said, which is we need to get people to not drive downtown and get people into the parking garages, right? And make it something that's attractive to come down, to come to any part of the city and use. So anyways, we'll get 30 seconds back.
Thanks, Carly. Okay, and I think for a final question tonight, I think this is a very important one. Question for candidates. Citizen engagement and voter turnout is getting lower at all levels of government. Tonight, only 4 out of 8 candidates are bothering to show up. And thank you 4 for coming, by the way. And only 35 people are in this meeting. I think there's a few more than that there were. There are a limited number of opportunities like this to hear from candidates. There doesn't even appear to be a forum for school trustees. Email lists aside, how would you work to engage more people in municipal politics? Rodrigo?
Thank you for that question, Michael. That is right on point. I think what we are seeing, in part, I don't know if it's a tactic that the more conservative candidates are just not going out to these type of events. It worked for them at the provincial level, so I don't know if that's part of it. But I think one of the things that we need to do as a municipality to get people is to trust that their voice will matter and that it will have an impact and that it will be heard. And this is where the city needs to do a better job communicating why we do decisions, what decisions are being made. We live in a society where we're overwhelmed by vast amounts of information, all different social media channels. And unless you happen to be following the city's social media channels, and unless you happen to have your Facebook feed or your Instagram feed open on the day where they announce the change, I'm regularly hearing from residents that didn't know that the city no longer accepts yard waste in their green bin. Because the city always said you can top off your green bin until January 2021 when there was a change and suddenly that was not allowed. So we need to get better at communicating with people. I think we need to rely less on digital methods of communication and figure out how to go back to either in paper or in person communication to involve more people in those conversations.
Thank you. And Carly.
Yeah, I mean, building off what Rodrigo said, I am hearing a lot at the door that people feel disconnected from what's happening municipally. And different people also tell me that they used to learn things from reading the paper, and it used to be like a centralized place for learning about municipal matters that, unfortunately, you know, we live in a fragmented world now. You know, you think that because we're hyper-connected that we would be able to communicate, but actually, I think a lot of the time the communication that's happening isn't very clear. And it's hard to get the right information and make your own decisions about it. Like a lot of the time it's, you know, it's not information. It's also somebody's opinion. So I agree with Rodrigo in that way. The other thing is that we need to see ourselves in council. And I think that a lot of the time for me, especially growing up, I never really saw myself in it. I didn't really get it. I didn't really feel engaged. And when I'm talking to people, they don't even really understand what happens at the municipal level. It's sad. I love municipal politics. It's very exciting to me. But for other people, they don't understand. And it's been a joy to just go around and actually just connect with people in person and also and learn more from that way. I think we need more public engagement that's real, and we need to be accessible to people as well. And I think that's something that I can certainly work on. Thanks.
Thank you, Carly. Morgan.
Thank you so much for this question. It is absolutely something that has distressed me as the years have gone on, seeing the steady decline in voter turnout. And honestly, as one that's worked on every single that's worked on all of the federal and provincial campaigns since 2018, the fact that Mike Schreiner won with a greater number of votes with much less numbers of people actually voting, it actually distressed me, knowing that the provincial election had such a low number. And I knew that I was running for city council, and I was like, wow, if it's that low for the provincial, we're going to be like around 20%. For the municipal, if something doesn't happen. And I think the way to do that is each of us as candidates needs to have that one-on-one conversation with the individuals at the door, with people that we meet on the street every single time we have any interaction. And if I am elected, one of the things that I will do is implement regular office hours at various locations across Ward 2, so I can be where the people are. And they can come to me during the day, in the evening, whatever it needs to be, whether it's a pub night or a coffee chat or a meeting at a community center, whatever needs to happen so people can come and see me when it works for them. That's what I want to do.
That's great. Thank you, Morgan. Julia.
Thank you. Yeah. It is distressing, this low voter turnout, and it seems to just be getting lower and lower every election. It's awful. And, you know, I speak to my friends who I believe to be relatively politically engaged, and, you know, they don't know what's going on. They don't know what's happening. They don't know, you know, who's running, and it's awful. You know, the comment, you know, we've got 31 people on this broadcast right now. We need to be getting the government to the people in ways like this, online, and, you know, in where people live, you know, with those town halls, pub nights, coffee hours, like Morgan mentioned. Bringing government to where people are so that they can meaningfully engage and meaningfully understand, you know, what is happening at the municipal government, because municipal government really is what affects you so most immediately every day. I also think we need to be exploring how we can communicate what City Hall does and the decisions that are made in plain language so that people can actually genuinely understand and not, you know, be reading a motion to make a motion that, you know, I've seen some kind of absurd looking things happening through City Hall. So making it actually understandable for the average person who doesn't really follow politics as much as we do.
Thank you. So it's now getting time to close. And we promised each of our candidates 1.5 minutes to sum up and leave us with their closing messages. And as I said earlier, we're going to reverse from the beginning to the end. So our first one will be Carly.
Thank you, Deb, and thanks to everyone who has spent the evening here with us. I really appreciate you taking the time to get to know all of us a little bit better. And I think that if I'm elected, you'll be getting somebody who is an engaged community leader, who is an active participant in a lot of the things that are happening in our community. I own a home in Ward 2, and I also have a business in Ward 2. And I'm really committed to, as Rodrigo was saying earlier, it's important that we're investing in our downtown because businesses like mine are there, and it is essential that we grow in a way that encourages more of this type of business to happen. I'm somebody who supports a lot of community initiatives, and I really want to see people communicate in a way that is supportive and proactive. I think that we have so much potential in this city, and coming out of the last 2 years, it's been hard. It's been a hard and trying time, and I am tired and frustrated. And like the lot of us, we've been on pause for 2.5 years. So much of our lives have gone by. And the next 4 years, I want to see things happen. I want to see people empowered to make projects happen in the city. And I would like to be able to be the one who's making these things happen too. Thank you.
Thank you, Carly. Our number two speaker is Ilya.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone who has come out tonight virtually to this event. It is really great to see people so engaged and wanting to make a difference for the future of our city. I feel really privileged to be running amongst a group of such passionate people. All of my colleagues here are good people who really believe in the future of the city. I do hope that I can work alongside someone here on City Council, but I know that we are all working towards a better future for Guelph. Seeing the folks who are here tonight participating, it's really heartening to me. So I just want to say thank you to everyone, and I hope that we can all, in whatever way, work together for the future of Guelph and work to make sure that Guelph does, work for everyone who lives here. No matter where you are in life, no matter what your station in life, I want people to be able to thrive. I want to see everyone being the best that they can because they are here in Guelph, and Guelph supports everyone who is here. So thank you once again to everyone.
Thank you. Morgan.
Thank you so very much, everyone, for taking this Thursday night and spending some time with the people that could potentially represent you at City Council for the next 4 years. It feels like a breezy breakfast moment. I love that it's just, I started my day with breezy breakfast. I feel like I'm ending my day with breezy breakfast. And when it comes to engaging people, that is something that I do. I talk to everybody. We need to have community connection. The only way to have community connection is to have conversations. Those conversations need to happen outside of City Hall, inside of City Hall, wherever people happen to be. And that's why, if I am elected, I do want to have regular times where I'm meeting people where they're at, whether it's someone's backyard or a local business. And I think one of the things that would augment the idea is being able to highlight local businesses that are willing to host people coming in, and we can create a greater sense of community throughout Ward 2. I look forward to hearing more questions from people. Please feel free to reach out to me on any of my avenues. Take care.
Thank you, Morgan. Rodrigo.
Well, Thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation tonight. There are two roles of councillors. One is to set policy, listen to constituents, and move the city forward. The other role is also to advocate for Guelph residents. What I do is I prioritize listening to constituents, and I want to represent everyone in the ward. I keep an open mind as each issue comes forward. And when I first heard about the cost of the library, I was thinking that's a lot of money for a main branch. But then I got to understand, I spoke with people and I understand that there was actually significant support for the library. And then I understood the economic benefits. So that changed my mind. And I ended up supporting the main branch new build. And that's what I want to continue doing. I want to continue reading every letter and listening to every delegation that comes to City Council so that I can understand. I want to continue sending out monthly newsletters to keep people informed. And I want to continue having coffee chats with residents so that I have an opportunity to connect with people, understand what your priorities are for the city of Guelph, and bring those priorities forward to council chambers. Thank you.
Thank you, Rodrigo. I just personally want to say thank you to all four of you. For me, I am a resident of Ward 2, by the way. So, and your passion and commitment to the city, I mean, thank you. From me, listening to you tonight was an honor. So I just want to thank you all. And I'm sure if, we've got our sign up. I want to thank you all for coming. And this event is accumulation of the collaboration of several community groups in Guelph. We thank each of them, and good night. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.